We have come to the last case of the day, 083117, Ernicus Negro versus American Family Property. Hello, Mr. Madoff.
Good morning, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honors, and good morning. May it please the Court, Counsel. I'm Aaron Madoff, and I stand before you today representing Brenda Ernicus Negro. The question before you is essentially this. By what method should unpaid overtime wages be calculated in a misclassification case? The district court in this case used a fluctuating workweek method found at 29 CFR section 778.114. We believe the district court erred and that the appropriate method for calculating unpaid overtime wages in a misclassification case is to use a fixed work week, in this case one of 40 hours.
Am I right in believing that, I think you just answered my question, that you don't contest the number of hours of overtime that Judge Kennelly found?
That's correct, Your Honor. That was a factual finding, and we have not challenged that.
Okay.
In the district court's defense, this court has never directly addressed the issue, and the three appellate courts that have, the First, Fifth, and Tenth Circuits, have all determined that the fluctuating work week is the appropriate way to measure unpaid overtime in a misclassification case. Nonetheless, there's a growing body of district court cases which come to the opposite conclusion, and we believe that the district court cases rest their conclusions on a more thorough and sound analysis of the applicable law.
And your position is that the fluctuating work week provision can only apply when there was an upfront understanding between the employer and the employee that she would receive overtime pay and the actual receipt of at least some overtime pay prior to the litigation.
The amount in the that would be calculated pursuant to the fluctuating work week. To be clear, not just prior to the litigation, but pursuant to 778.106 at the time that the services are rendered. What we essentially have here, Your Honor, is a situation where the fluctuating work week requires a mutual agreement to be on the fluctuating work week. If you're misclassified, you're not agreeing that I'm a non-exempt employee on the fluctuating work week. The second reason, as I bring them together, is that you also have to actually receive the overtime payments, as we've just discussed. And thirdly, we have the public policy argument, which is that the fluctuating work week in misclassification cases provides an incentive for employers to misclassify, or to borrow from Anderson versus Mount Clemens pottery, to place a premium on the employer's violation of the law. The reason for this is that the employer first has the chance that he will never pay overtime premiums because the employee never complains, and then if he does, the statute of limitations may have eliminated some or all of those premiums, and then even if the employer is caught, he still pays less under the fluctuating work week than he would have paid under the time and a half fixed work week in the first instance. If you turn to page, I believe, 33 of our brief, we've given you a chart. I know that the last time I gave you a nice big chart to show it. I did not blow them up for you, Judge, but I figured that your eyes were good enough that you could see it this time around.
I can hardly see you.
But I don't feel I have the time to go into all of the detailed arguments. If I can address specific questions, I'm happy to do so.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honors. I will reserve the balance of my time.
Okay. Mr. Navicus, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Before I begin, Your Honors, I would like to thank this Court for this opportunity since it's my first time addressing this Court, and I consider that to be a professional honor.
Oh, well, we're honored to have you.
That having been said,
where have you been?
Mr. Madoff raised some very interesting points in his briefs. And essentially, what his briefs represent is a scholarly discourse, I would submit, with respect to the fluctuating work week, its genesis under the Act, And what I believe is more appropriate in this case is the application of the law as it exists to the facts, which I think is supported by Judge Kennelly's rather comprehensive findings of fact and conclusions of law. As a matter of fact, his findings of fact compromised most of his decision.
Well,
and that's where it's important.
It's not an easy, you know, this is not easy stuff, but the language of the fluctuating work provision envisions that the employee is receiving overtime compensation in addition to a fixed salary. But that wasn't true here. So why is it appropriate to apply the provision?
Well, for one thing, Your Honor, the misclassification issue is something that arose after, once the litigation began. Basically, the fluctuating work week, as the Valerio case clearly pointed out, says that there must be an agreement between the employer and the employee, a clear agreement that that individual is going to get paid a fixed amount regardless of the hours worked during the week. That's what happened here. There was an agreement between American Family Property Services and Ms. Ornikis Negro that she would get $1,000 a week regardless of the hours that she worked. As a matter of fact, in the Perez case that was cited by both sides, as long as an employer agrees with the contemporaneous, as long as there's an agreement without a contemporaneous objection on the part of the employee to the arrangement, there's nothing that would preclude the application of the fluctuating work week method. And in this case, both parties agreed. And not only that, but Ms. Ornikis Negro's actions, in effect, belied her later words. In other words, when she took this job, she put those hours in. There's no question that she worked in excess of 40 hours and never less than that, quite often more than that, as the judge found in his findings. However, there was never, ever any complaints from Ms. Ornikis Negro during the time that she was carrying out her duties at American Family with respect to either A, the amount of hours that she was required to work, or B, the lack of any quote-unquote extra pay that would somehow or other seem to accrue to her if you follow along with what the plaintiff or the appellant was stating here.
Now, does applying the fluctuating work provision give employers in cases like this one a sort of perverse incentive in that the more hours of overtime an employee works, the smaller her base pay will be for purposes of the calculation of overtime?
Your Honor, I believe that the court in Valerio and in some of the other cases addressed that issue, and that is true. It is, if you apply the FWW formula, it is somewhat weird because the more you work, the less you do get paid. However, the point is, and as this court found in the Condo versus Cisco, the fixed amount that the employee agrees to accept for the work that they perform encompasses the overtime pay, basically. There's no reference to it. It's that the employee agrees to accept X amount for whatever time they put in. In the event that there's a classification, then there's got to be a remedy. And as a matter of fact, in the Perez case, Judge Pallmeyer specifically stated there's nothing in Section 778.114 which precludes the fluctuating work week method where overtime is awarded retroactively as an award. And the one place where I would disagree respectfully with Mr. Madoff is I don't believe that upholding Judge Kennelly's decision would somehow open a floodgate for employers, to rampantly ignore the act and start making deals where, okay, I'm going to pay you X amount regardless of how much you work. I don't think that's going to be the result here. What happened was is Judge Cannelli looked at the facts that were presented before him at trial. He made a comprehensive examination of all the testimony and found that there was a comprehensive, there was an agreement between AFPS and Mr. Nikas Negro that she work, she get $1,000 a week regardless of how much she worked. And on that basis, then the court found, given the type of work that she was doing, she wasn't exactly exempt. Therefore, there was a misclassification, and in that regard, the court applied the fluctuating work week method. And I think the court was fully consistent in its application of the law, and I believe that the opinion and the decision should be affirmed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Madoff.
I'd like to address some of the points that Mr. Nemekas made. First, I don't believe that the misclassification arose after the litigation began. Ms. Ernicus Negro was misclassified the day she was hired. In fact, she was misclassified as an independent contractor, not just misclassified as to her exemptions. The point that there's an agreement that she would get a fixed salary, that's not what 778.114 says. It says an understanding with his employer that he will receive such fixed amount as straight time pay. The words straight time pay necessarily refer to 207A. We don't talk about straight time pay for exempt salaried employees. We talk about straight time pay for non-exempt people who are on the hour so that we show the distinction. He says that Judge Pellmeyer, and he's referring to the Radio Shack case, says there's nothing there that that says you can't use the FWW retroactively. While I enjoy appearing before Judge Pellmeyer, I respectfully disagree with her on this point. I believe that subsection C is very clear in that it says where you haven't paid at the time, you cannot compliance with the Act cannot be rested on any application of the fluctuating workweek overtime formula. Any application, in my view, Your Honor, would include a retroactive application. Additionally, I didn't want to go into it here because it's not in the briefs, but Mr. Nemekas has told us that this isn't going to create a floodgate of cases. Yesterday, I saw a piece produced by the National Employment Law Project that the Department of Justice has just hired 150 new investigators because wage claims and wage abuses are exploding. With this economy going down, employers are doing more and more of this. I can't give you a scientific discussion of it, but I think it's also a bit inappropriate to suggest that it's not going to happen either. We don't have a scientific discussion going the other way. The last point was that Ms. Negro, he says, was silent on the point. I have quoted Judge Oberdorfer and Rainey, as has Cowan versus Treetop and Scott versus OTS and other cases for a lot of this, but the one point that was found nowhere in the case law, which I did reach for, was this concept that you can agree that you're not going to receive overtime premiums. That flies in the face of Brooklyn Savings Bank versus O'Neill. Having practiced employment law for a number of years now, having practiced FLSA law, the concept that somebody can waive their rights to overtime premiums is simply anathema to our understanding of the Fair Labor Standards Act.
That shocks you.
What?
I bet it shocks me. I've been working overtime for about the last 17 years.
Your Honor, I'm not entirely certain, but I would suspect that your education appointment might subject you to professional exemption, but of course your colleagues would probably be in a better position to discuss your professionalism.
But I just didn't want to break anybody into tears here.
All right. Oh, thank you both for a very well-argued case, and it will be taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until Monday. Did you see the overtime he works?
I feel better.
He said tomorrow morning.
I'll be in the office tomorrow morning myself, Your Honor. If you want to come by and have coffee, you're welcome to join me.
Oh, ex parte.
Bye-bye, everyone.